inspire, educate, connect. This is Yoga Digest, a vibrant community of passionate changemakers.
I'm Jen Bodner, and you're listening to Yoga Digest Now. We feature real people and real stories. Yoga Digest is your resource for inspiration, health, and well-being. Wake up to the now with tips from the experts on being the best you, achieving your goals, and finding balance for your mind, body, and soul. The time for living life fully is now. Hello, and thank you so much for joining us for the Yoga Digest Now podcast. I'm very excited to sit with my friend and visit today, Mr. Keith Mitchell. I'll tell you a little bit about him, but it's better always to hear the story from directly from the source. But he's a former all-pro NFL football player turned internationally renowned celebrity yogi. He is a mindfulness, master of mindfulness. And I'm looking forward to talking with you, Keith, about your mindfulness playbook, book that is out. But first, why don't you tell us, I love your story. And for those listening who may not be familiar of how you came into yoga, and I'm curious, do you say that you found yoga or that yoga found you?
Well, it's a pleasure being with you and having this opportunity to be interviewed by you and your platform, Yoga Digest. It's always an honor to interact and have these types of dialogues and conversations, in particular around mindfulness. So how I started as a football player. I attained it from being outside of Dallas and growing up in the city, Garland, Texas, and I aspired I had the idea of manifesting when I didn't know the word manifestation and what manifesting meant, but I had created a goal, and that goal was to land me any opportunity or every opportunity desired to play for the various colleges that were just, you know, the top ranks at that time. And I chose Texas A&M, and I went through the journey of being at Texas A&M, had a great stint there, and I journeyed to the National Football League. So as a kid, I had this dream, this vision. And I began to plant seeds, not really even knowing that what I was doing, to articulate into a sequence. But as I look back, I planted seeds, and I actually started to work toward that goal at an early age. And it landed me in the National Football League, where 1% make it. And through that try and that understanding of that, I began to be really good at my craft. I was all pro at the position. I played linebacker, which is the quarterback of the defense, and it's the gladiator alpha on the field that goes in full speed and hits people as hard as you can. And 6 years in New Orleans, I went to Houston after that, and then I went to Jacksonville, and this is where my journey began with yoga and really how the concept of yoga found me. We were playing the Buffalo Bills. I was in Jacksonville for our first home game, making a tackle. A random routine tackle that I made like thousands of times. I ended up on my back and I couldn't move. And I was there for about 45 minutes. Through that story, I was later diagnosed with this spinal contusion. And yeah, and it led me through my transformation, my transition here. I'm so grateful that I landed here, where there's other places I could have been, but I'm so grateful that the practices found me through conscious breathing, later to meditation, and then through yoga, and now I teach mindfulness. So what a very interesting, dichotomy of a transformation for me.
Yeah, I mean, you basically went from one of the most aggressive sports out there, tackle football, like you said, just all-out speed, and now you are this motivational mindfulness coach. And I love that you're from Texas, and my boys are just huge Texas A&M fans. So I love that you mentioned that, because I sometimes forget that you're from here, because now you're out there in LA. But so Texas strong and Texas fam here. But I also want to just touch back because you used words like manifesting early on and planting seeds. Curious, did you ever do any physical yoga throughout your football career?
I really didn't. Besides having someone stretch me pre-game for about an hour, 45 minutes or an hour every game I played. Besides that, no. So when I eventually got into the practices, it was just a whole new interpretation of what I had been doing for his moving and what I had been doing for his breathing. So it was a definite connectivity to that body, to that mind, to really do some interesting things. I think it's a power. What I find when I think about yoga is accessing and tapping into a power that's within us that for a lot of us we never knew existed.
Right. So Keith, when you had your injury, you were actually partially paralyzed for a while, and that's when you began to do breath work. Tell me a little bit about that and when you remember, I mean, if you remember like a shift or a moment where the power in just breathing, even though you were, you know, unable to move for a while there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just totally shifted my perspective, not only of myself, but also my predicament and me as the self navigating through the predicament. So it's very, very, as I kind of just, you know, analyze it and I look at it, you know, the nurse, while being diagnosed with a spinal contusion from the neck down, basically on the right side of my body, being like numb to basically paralyzed, not being able to move it. And, you know, and just going from 1 minute being fully capable to the next, I mean, that's really a dire strait. That's when you would probably live more in a fight or flight. And luckily for me, the nurse, she talked to me about breathing. She talked to me about conscious breathing. And I had never really thought about breath and how it functioned within me or using breath as a tool. It never dawned on me the concept of how breath can participate in this. And so when I applied myself with it, now it's like, wow, it gave me a tool that I could combat the circumstance. It gave me a tool that I could contribute to my own healing. Before that, I was just, in my mind, considered like, okay, I'm the victim here, and I have to wait until they tell me what I need to do. When I learned conscious breathing, I could participate right now in what I needed to do to be well.
Right. You were dealing with not just physical pain, but probably a great deal of emotional loss as well. So that's great that you were able to overcome and grow and learn through that. And now you're really able to share with the people you work with this gift of overcoming really big trauma. And I think we're kind of all going through some trauma right now with COVID being a part of our lives. And so I'm just glad that there's people like you out there in the world doing the work that you're doing, because we need it so much right now. And I'm wondering how you're keeping your, I know you've been doing a lot of traveling, which I'm so envious of, but outside of that, I know you're doing good work on your travels as well. What you're doing and how you're helping others deal with this this trauma that we're feeling at a global level, and maybe our listeners can pick up some tidbits on how it can help them through this process.
Definitely. My quarantine process happened when I lived in Southlake for 11 years, and I had this, I think, probably about 10,000 square foot home, and I was confined to my one room, my bedroom, and I had to have someone basically feeding me. My quarantine put myself in check when I had four or five cars that I couldn't drive. I had this big house that I couldn't even really be in. I only had one room I could be. So I began to really, through my contemplation or through my quarantine, I began to contemplate, like, what does all this stuff actually mean? And is it bringing me happiness? Is it adding value to my life? Or is it just a facade? So I got to go through the quarantine pre-COVID and got my first take to really what it looks like and what it is. And it took me through, it kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with, I'm sure you are, Vipassana. Mm-hmm. And like a Vipassana is meant to break you. And just the dynamic of a quarantine is meant to break you, in a sense, mentally. It's meant to bring everything from the, that you've been like putting on the back burner, as they say, everything that you've kind of distracted yourself from dealing with, now it comes to surface. And when it comes to surface, we can't run because there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go but right here with you in your breath right now. And for me, I learned so much. And hopefully the people are using this time to really go in and realize the essentials, what really the essentials really mean. And really also our lives as we look at it and look at the substance of our lives, the substance of the relationship, the connectivity that we've allowed ourselves or not allowed ourselves to have. I mean, it's a really perfect opportunity to, you know, it's one of those things. Things in life are going to happen, right? Life is going to happen. We can't control that dynamic. But what we can do with the consciousness of mindfulness, we can control the way that we show up to be in it, to be a participant in this thing we talk about as life.
So I'm glad that you mentioned the quarantine giving us all the opportunity to go inside and for things to rise to the surface, because probably a lot of people have seen some things rise to the surface that they didn't want to see. And I think we have this very heightened sense of awareness or sensitivity, or however you want to word that. And this has obviously brought us into what we're facing now, and that's dealing with systemic racism, which, you know, we talked about briefly last time I spoke to you. But I'm wondering how you feel this has, do you feel like this whole quarantine brought this on? Do you feel like this is something that's been in the works? I just want to get some insight from you on what we're going through with this. And do you see more like this coming up now that we are having the opportunity to sit with things that are very uncomfortable, that we've maybe been masking, like you said, with things like our work and our houses and our cars and all the distractions?
Well, the thing that comes to me in a place of denial, well, healing is not possible. And I think a lot of times we have, you know, again, distracted ourselves from things, you know, have allowed certain things to exist. We've adapted to it. We've accepted it. Whatever we've done to not deal with the issues, and the issues are ultimately ourselves. I look at all these dynamics as mental health issues. I look at all of it as a mental health. And then when you really look at it, like for like again, I don't know how a lot of people consider yoga or meditation or mindfulness. I consider these practices as practices that will take us to more of a self-mastery, to look at ourselves unapologetically, to see how we actually show up in the world. See, are we a positive person or we're a negative person? What comes out when we call and we attach to these words like triggers, because really triggers are things that we want to hold on to. What kind of stories do I create for myself? How am I living in my life? Do I have love in my life? Am I lovable? Like these dynamics, because, you know, it really boils down to the concept of hurt people. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, we want to always look and blame somebody like this and that. It's like we have to look at ourselves, especially when we're at the most, and when we're really being hit. It's like an old proverb that says, if you throw a rock in the midst of a group of people, and the person who screams is the person that the rock landed on. Well, this is the dynamic. Like the person screaming, they need to realize, okay, within themselves, like how have they participated, whether it be positive or negative. And then we also have to be, you know, when you talk about problem solving, it's also an opportunity for us to listen and engage and hear the stories and hear the people's different sides to it. And we can be easily so biased, like we find ourselves biased to ourselves of how we show up in the world. That's why it's important to start there, because to realize that biasness does exist. Like I tell people all the time, if you're watching of the sports, and you know, and you see a person who claims they caught the ball, and then they say, review it because I caught it. And they're so convinced that they caught the ball. But as soon as you replay it, well, the tape shows you a truth and you didn't catch the ball. You know, and I think we also take that same behavioral pattern to, oh, we have a bias instead. Oh, I'm all about just love, but then there's a reality. And I think this is a perfect opportunity to go in and see that and question yourself, question the basic concept of, like you mentioned, racism. Well, what is racism? Racism? Why does racism exist? Like, ask these simple questions. Have this dialogue in your homes. If you're getting the opportunity to have the round table dinner, have that conversation and discuss it. How many conversations do we have in our families? How prepared, like, you've been to retreats, you've done retreats, and what you'll find is a lot of the conversations we've never had in our households, you know? So a lot of these things are just perpetuated because we haven't even skilled ourselves to have proper, intelligent conversations. So when you talk about the soul searching, it's just not just the obvious, it's the simplicity. It's the simple things of just asking questions to problem solve.
And I think that, when you talk about something like racism, there's a definition where a lot of people will, and that's why we want to talk about systemic racism, because that's a much deeper level, right? And that's the part that a lot of people aren't really understanding or are not seeing. You know, I heard something in the last month or so about, you'll hear people say, I don't see color. They see everybody the same. And some of the feedback I heard on that was, that's part of the problem is no, there is a difference.
I have a joke on that. I have a joke.
Okay.
So to the people who are listening that they say that they don't see color, well, whenever the next event comes, I want you to do something. Here's an exercise that you can do.
Okay.
Put a blindfold on, and when you have to be dressed and ready to go to some event, right? Put a blindfold on and go pick your clothing. And let's see if you don't see color.
So I think that... but that has created an issue. And, you know where I live here in North Dallas, and we have a big population of Black people. So it's very normal to me. But I've also lived here in my life, you know, the high school I graduated from, wound up graduating from, moved around a little bit. It was a very small town, and I don't think we had a Black person in the town, definitely not in the school from K through 12, you know. So it can be a different experience, and whether intentional or unintentional, not knowing this this different culture, if you will. One of the things I said to you was, during this time, it's difficult to know what to say, what questions to ask. And you did say it was a good time to ask questions. What can you share with us, maybe even based on your own experiences with racism? Have you ever had any incidents?
Well, personally... And I can understand twofold the whole dynamic of people not aware, and then people who are in the trenches who are aware. Being in athletics, it put a different, I don't know, stigma on us or on me in particular, I guess. I didn't really see, because you're so consumed with the competition, and you're so consumed with the things that you're doing to maintain this level of excellence. And sometimes you don't look back and say, wow, okay, these things are happening. A lot of times you're not educated. And educating means, you know, there's a meme that's going around. If you've only been educated in school, then you're not educated. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that needs to be learned that is not taken care of in school. There's an in-depth history of knowing thyself, you know, from nutrition to like to real basic history of things that happen. And I think from not discovering those things does create a dissonance. So in my growth, in my development of knowing thyself, one of the places I had to pass through in my transformation is just really realizing that I am a Black man on this planet. You know, there's stages, there's steps to get to the oneness, if you will. Mm-hmm. And to see that dynamic and seeing others who perceive me, you know, and understanding that, it's like, there's depths to it. It's like things, you know, in a certain case, like in my situation, I never paid attention to it. But a system concept, a systematic concept, as I begin to study and learn more, I begin to see it. I begin to, you know, go into the 13th Amendment in the Constitution. I begin to go into the different things of just the basic history of what's missing and how oppression has been perpetuated through the years. You know, it's interesting. You know,
I love that you kind of brought up the education piece, because something that I've been, and it's been talked about before, but it keeps coming up. You know, there's what we know, and then there's what we don't know, and then there's what we don't know. And I think that that's where we are really at right now, as a result of this going in. So much is being uncovered, so much is being shared, and you have people demanding information at a high level for the first time, I think, in a long time, because we have been just like worker bees, just going about, doing our business, doing our routine, really not even always thinking. And some people, you know, are better at this than others, but the majority of people are just in a kind of a, what's the hamster wheel, right? You just get in and you get up in the morning and you start running until you're done at the end of the day. So I feel like I don't know, would you agree? Do you think we have an opportunity right now, Keith, to see an evolution, a growth, a revolution, if you will, with
I think we have a prime opportunity. I think that's why I look at mindfulness, and I look at it as an incorporation of a yoga, because the resistance in the body takes place also in the mind. And this is why mindfulness is an opportunity to have a yoga practice within your mind, and the attachments to these ideas, these beliefs, these perceptions of ourselves, when we haven't really, you know, it's a very interesting thing. It's when people hold on to, like, say, if you had to go and ask the random person who was supporting the statue that they had an idea that they felt that shouldn't be taken down, if you ask the person, well, what do you know about the person? What did the person do in history that you know of that was so profound? Well, a lot of these people that hold such a high response to it, they most of them won't even know. You know, it's just like, yeah, most people wouldn't have a clue about what the actual person that they're trying to defend.
Opening up Google real quick, right?
Yeah. And so when you're doing that, you have to also take responsibility for that, because that's what we call in psychology the cognitive dissonance. It's like, and also these things internally, this is the same fight that we have in liberating ourselves from ourselves. It's the perception that we hold about ourselves. The same process of going deeper in within to heal is the same process that we have to go when we look at our society. I mean, it's the same steps, it's the same protocol. Now, the problem is, just like when we found the self-love or self-work practices to invest in ourselves, and, you know, the same resistance that we had in the beginning, or the same confrontations that we had in the beginning, is what people are being forced to deal with. It's because it's right in their face. The media is pumping it. It's like all these things are so right in their face, so they have to deal with it. So, you know, it's good and bad. It's a concept of not good or bad. It's just kind of what it is. And so that's why it's so, I invite everyone to really connect to someone who can help you through this process and realize that this is a mental health. This is a mental And mental health, when we think about mental health, we tend to think, I don't have a problem. It's like, my mind is good. But it's not about necessarily that. It's the ability to process information about yourself, processing information about the world. So when we go forward in it or navigate with ourselves in it, we can make choices that are more conscious and choices that are not and more positive choices in our everyday life. That's the idea with it.
Yeah. I've been talking a great deal about just mental health issues, and this is with everybody, not just wellness professionals and experts and mindfulness coaches like yourself, but just the everyday person is feeling this strain mentally because we've all been separated. We haven't had the opportunity to connect in a way that we're used to. And I think that there is a vast majority of people who feel that they have taken a great deal for granted with regards to being able to go into a yoga class. I'm concerned, and I'd like to get your input on what this looks like. Like right now, we're in it still. You know, we're really not out of this. And it's kind of like when there's a hurricane that comes in and it's tearing everything up, you don't really know what the damage is, right, until the hurricane is over, or the tornado, or whatever you want to call it. And I do feel like the mental health of people is going to be severely impacted. And I'd just like to get your insight on that and what we can be doing perhaps to get a head start on that awareness, you know?
Definitely. And when you talk about the yoga classes, I mean, those are people who have, you know, said, okay, I need to invest into myself for self-worth or self-growth in some capacity. Well, imagine the majority of the population. Majority of the population has little to no types of investment into selves. They're lived the sedentary lifestyle. Their connectivity has been very minimum to limited. These are even people who've been married 15, 20, 30 years. Because where did you find the capacity to have or build a working understanding of how to build relationships? Because we never created them for ourselves, you know? So it's like, what I feel is, what happens is the malnourishment factor, our inability to connect, has made us, you know, we're basically suffering the consequences of that. You know, it's like to be, you know, one of the things that I've been really, you know, diving into the thought of it anyway, is, you know, this life is very challenging, you know, and, you know, the things that we go through, we have to find toughness, inner toughness, to move through it, to overcome them. This and a lot of times that toughness, we hold on to it still. So that toughness, and we talk about it a lot in meditation to soften it, because that toughness is still there, and it makes us, and it holds a limitation to what and how we can be loved, but we really want to be loved. So the insanity of that dynamic going back and forth, it drives us insane. Because really, when you look at the whole nature of, you know, seeing transitions, seeing things change, it's like, I mean, I'm trying to put a word to it, but it's like seeing yourself in an uncomfortable situation, seeing yourself in an awkward situation, different than like you've ever allowed yourself to be, like to say, I love you to someone, or to say, I don't understand. I don't know. Help me. Could you please help me understand this more? Like these things, these are the subtleties that show up in everyday life. That is, in my opinion, a yoga practice, a yoga in a fundamental that's happening. Sure. That we get an opportunity to have a breakthrough within ourselves, to have a new experience. What I've been studying is the nature of why men die earlier than women. Mm-hmm. And what I find is the men die of heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And because they compartmentalize things into their heart, they keep everything in. and they don't let it out. They don't give themselves an opportunity to express themselves and say those simple things that they're like biting and gritting their teeth because they want to say I love you, but they can't. It's like their perception of themselves won't allow them to. And the whole concept of why I call it a yoga, because it's your own intra breakthrough to come out and just allow yourself to participate in a different way than you ever could think or imagine yourself to do it, you know, which goes around, you know, because now we're dealing with the emotional stunted growth. We're dealing with the emotional trauma. We're dealing with a limited emotional vocabulary. So, yeah, so it's the awkwardness of just speaking these words that we've never, they're basic foreign language, which is within English, within ourselves, that we have the hardest time doing. But when we allow it, now we open up gateways to new revelations in our lives, to have new experiences in our lives even. And it's a magical thing. It's a magical place. And I'm not trying to sound so esoteric, but I'm also just keeping it to a fundamental, because we can look at the whole world and try to take on that whole problem in one conversation, but that's not the protocol. That's not the proper formula, in my opinion. It's like the elephant in the room. You got to kind of take it one bit at a time, in a sense.
There is a common theme. I hear a very common theme, though, in all that you're saying. And as a mother of three boys, I appreciate you bringing up the story about men holding in feelings and vulnerability, probably more than anything, because there is so much pressure and expectations for boys, men, to be strong, to be leaders, to be successful, to be independent, and, you know, softening can be seen as weakness to some. And especially your background, it makes sense, those who are athletes, because you do have to be very resilient. But the thing about resilience, right, is that I just did a story on this, is you actually do have to feel that vulnerability. That's the way you become more resilient, right? I love talking about yoga with you because I know you just get it. It's such a core level. Yeah. It is a stripping. It's almost an unlearning of everything we've been taught, and being able to look at ourselves and look at the people around us without all of the impressions we've been given and been taught our whole lives.
Yeah, and if I could add something to that part is that also the when we talk about the man dynamic, if we go back and we look at the last 10 years or maybe a little bit more, maybe 15, 12 years, the shift in our population has been women functioning in more of a masculine role, right?
And
that masculinity within it, when you talk about toxic masculinity, another word concept I've been playing with as well is that toxic masculinity doesn't exist solely in a man, because we all have the capabilities of holding that masculinity. Now, how have we been using that masculinity? In a lot of cases, it has been very toxic.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier. This is kind of getting off topic, but I want to talk about it with you because I know that you are holistic in your approach, and something that you mentioned earlier was, you know, talking about nutrition when you were looking at the whole piece of our health. And I think that this has given us an opportunity, you know, this COVID is especially dangerous to those whose health is at risk. And so I just want to talk to you a little bit about nutrition and your opinion on just kind of some of the food that we have and what we don't know with regards to that.
Well, the epiphany that I've had the other day, and I was just thinking, I was like, well, a lot of the cases, because I'm putting together my company, it's called Ameta, and it's a supplement line. It's an alkaline vegan concept. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the various compounds and what we're putting together. and I'm using some adaptogens. And adaptogens are similar to what in society when the bodybuilding world is time release. And so adaptogens, what they do is help you when you need it. They only release when you need it. When you're emotionally charged into a fight or flight, it helps you resolve and just come into peace. It's an influx of magnesium to calm the brain down, to calm down, just putting more oxygen into your body when these moments happen. They're called adaptogen herbs. But really, when you talk about consciousness, it's fueled. And what are you putting in your tank? Are you putting in substance? Are you putting in the fast food concept, the faux food? And what I was thinking, the thought I had, when they put in the various chemicals that they've been putting in the food as the last of 20 years, we don't know the consequences of that. And I think what we're seeing in a lot of our society, we're actually beginning to see the consequences of this faux food, this fructose, this corn syrup, this substance that's really not serving the human mental capacity. And so that's why when I began to put adaptogens in the herbs or the compounds, it began to make me see things and understanding that we're fueling consciousness, and most of us are fueling with stuff that's not really serving us, stuff that's actually bringing us down and making us act out of a norm or acting out of a character of what a human's supposed to be acting like.
Yes, I like that a lot. Tell me, what's your supplement again?
It's a meta nutrition. And what we do is, I learned under Dr. Sabi, profound herbalist out of Honduras. And when I began to, that was like nutrition to become a vegan after living in Texas, like we talked earlier. I mean, I never could imagine myself without eating a steak, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And I would eat meat 3, 4, 5 times a day to where I am now. I'm like, it's just, I would have never imagined. But that's the ability to have that transition, to be open, because it's not about your thoughts about yourself. It's about, do you want to heal or do you not? You know, one of the things I've been asking people in my classes is, what is your greatest desire, right? And then what is the greatest fear? Mm-hmm. And then what is your limitation? Mm-hmm. You know, so when you have a desire and it's, you consider that your greatest desire, that's your end game. And like for me, healing was my end game. Well, then I can't have a limitation. I can't allow fear to stop me. So it's not that I don't have fear, but I can't allow fear to stop me from accomplishing the goal and my desired state of being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a great opportunity you had to use mindfulness to get past that, because I'm sure that was probably, it was what was in your head made it, you know, as challenging as the physical healing that you had to do as well.
Yeah. And so it's, and what we're talking about, so here, bringing it all 360, basically what I learned from conscious breathing, right, is we begin to really create an emotional maturity. So now when I'm reactive, that's a shallow breath. I'm in the chest, and so my heart, my lungs are there. They don't need your help to pump. They pump naturally. But what becomes stagnant is the lower internal organs, right? So when I breathe deeper, I give nutrition, nourishment to these areas where we have in the liver. The liver is anger, and the kidney is fear, and the intestine is worry. So now I give oxygen, nourishment to these areas. So when I breathe, just simply breathing from the belly, now I'm less reactive and I'm more contemplative. I'm less in my fight or flight and I'm more intentional. So how I choose to show up is just simply allowing myself the time to be able to process the circumstance, process the situation before I have a reaction to it.
Beautifully said. Yeah. And it's hard to do when we are living in a state of fear or the unknown. Keith, do you have, so I know meditation is huge for you. And so for those who might be hesitant or, you know, not sure how to get started with a meditation practice, do you have any tips for us?
Yes. And actually, it's been running for a couple months now, but I have a 12-album mindfulness meditation on my website, keithmitchell59.com. And so really, when it comes to meditation, it simply starts with your breath. Like, you know, if you have the luxury to have an asana to your meditation, meaning a proper, you know, how they show and draw up a picture, you get to sit in cross-leg position. And I say, you know, if you have that luxury, well, prop yourself up with a supporting wall, use some pillows for your knees, and just allow yourself to focus on your breath. And while we're going to focus on your breath, meaning you could count the numbers or the length of your breath with numbers, and what that's going to do, that's going to occupy your mind. And through the process of occupying your mind, you're going to begin to take in this oxygen, higher levels of oxygen than you ever taken in previous. And what happens with that, that begins to secrete hormones like oxytocin, that begins to secrete dopamine into the bloodstream that allows you to relax in a way that you've never relaxed before. And also being held in that space where you're supported, to have the wall, to have the pillows there, where you can just let go. Because the idea of letting go, we first have to experience it in our bodies before we can conceptualize it in our minds. We have to go through the experience to take notes of how and what that looks like and what that feels like. So that's something simple you can do at home who are thinking about meditation. And you can actually do that. And that's free of charge. This is you at home.
Tell me the name of your program again.
It's on my website, keithmitchell59.com, and I have a 12-album there. It's mindful meditation. So the difference between mindfulness meditations and a basic meditation, a meditation takes you through the role of the observer. You get to observe yourself and see mm-hmm. yourself, and then that begins to help you with the perception of yourself and to take some of the limitations off of what you thought you could be and what's possible for you. And what you can be. Now, mindfulness is the concept of taking those ideas, that perception, that new perception that you've allowed yourself to move into possibility with. Now we're going to take it into a direction. We're going to take it out into the world. We're going to take and give you tangibles that you can actually start today with as you're introducing the meditation or mindfulness into your day-to-day. And that's the difference.
And what was the inspiration behind the mindfulness playbook book? And is that out currently? We can get that already here, right?
Well, it's not out currently because we got some really cool things. Potentially, I can't. It's with the NFL, but I can't disclose a lot of it. But
okay.
I'm excited. The thing is, I don't. My preference is not to be in the waiting room to, you know, get things done. But you know. The inspiration behind it was, like, we had this saying, and in sports, we had this idea of, we think on weekdays and we react on Sundays. So in your practice is the opportunity to think about things. It's your practice is the opportunity to sit. Like when we just talked about, you know, propping yourself against the wall. You know, a lot of times people, what you'll find is they like to sit uncomfortable because they see the mannequin, they see the pictures of people meditating, so they want to jump right into that extreme asana. Well, give yourself a chance. Let yourself win. Build yourself up to hold the higher standard or higher ground or what they say you should look like or be like in your meditation posture. Give yourself the opportunity to take a baby step to crawl, as they say, to walk, to run, right? And so and understand that behavior and where that comes from. So in this, you know, we begin to find tangibles in which we can actually make useful in our day. Like we just talked about the breath. So when I'm processing something, I can just simply breathe to understand it. You know, and we talked earlier about questioning, ask questions, and not just questions about history, but when you are being approached or being someone speaking to you and you can take it negative or positive, or in particular the negative sense, ask them, what do you mean by this? Get clarification before you respond. You know, a lot of times we go into assumption that it's more of a negative thing than a positive thing. A lot of times people only are equipped with certain words to use, you know? So with the simple concept of mindfulness and questions and simple things like that, we begin to, again, with those two simple things, we begin to take the way we show up in the world to a higher level. We begin to set a bar a little bit higher than we had yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea.
Well, and you know, it's real easy to be calm when life is easy. You know, you got me thinking as I was looking at the cover of your book here, and it says 8 strategies for winning at the game of life. And as I mentioned, you know, I have boys and we're in Texas, so, you know, we're into football down here. And one thing I notice on the field is that when the boys are winning, you know, it's real easy to stay upbeat. But the moment, and this is, you know, both sides, watching both sides of the games, and we just came off of a tournament this past weekend, and the boys do get, provided they're young, right? Mm-hmm. But they lose control of their emotions pretty quickly. So I want to ask you, do you think, had you had yoga in your life when you were playing, that it would have made you play differently?
I don't know, because so how I look at sports, right, is when preparing to be this character as the athlete, well, I learned how to do that. But what's happened is we didn't learn the idea of being a human. We didn't have an emphasis of how do I become a better human? Like, so if you see the interviews of the athletes and you see the interviewer asking, well, what are you going to do this week to do different than what you did last week? Well, I'm going to focus every day to get better. That's the plan. Well, how do we do that as humans? And the thing about, and how I apply the observer, like I mentioned in meditation, is that being the observer in sports, or the meditation in sports, is the film study. Because we have this saying about the film, the camera, the eye in the sky doesn't lie. So you have an idea of how you showed up, but then when you rewind the tracks on the screen, the game tape, well, it shows you something totally different. Mm-hmm. And so we go with that and not the biases that you have in your mind. Because for whatever reason, we have an idea and there's a reality. And so through the concept of mindfulness, we want to get our ideas closer to the reality. Because a lot of times we're off.
Yeah, we don't always get that feedback in life. We can't always go back and watch the tape, right?
but you can, though. But you can, and I'm going to show you how you can in your meditation through the concept. In the basic message, that's why we introduced the meditation as the observer. And to the observer, you get to observe yourself and how we can observe how life has presented itself and how you've shown up into it. Well, you can observe love in your life. You can observe, are you a positive person or are you a negative person? Have you been more positive or you've been more negative? Now, are you lovable? In what ways are you lovable? You know, it's like these concepts, these simple terminologies, simple questions of simplicity can be and determine, like when we ask, because when we answer these questions, well, it's going to stick with us because we expect the world to speak truth to us. And a lot of times we just speak lies to ourselves. So we begin to see that mirror and see how we've been doing that through this process. So the win is when I can see how I showed up and then I can come back because no one's going to be perfect through this process. But I can come back and say, you know, how I did that a few minutes ago, I apologize because that's not how I want to be. You know, and that's a win because that's something that you've never allowed yourself to do before and you just did it. And so over time, through the patterns, correcting those patterns, now you have a more an alignment in the way that you are wanting to show up instead of the ideas, instead of so much of the mistakes. So now you begin to hone that to have a certain level of perfection or a certain level of excellence in that. So we show you how to break these different things down. And really, in my opinion, it's simple. And I've even taken some of the football terminology of and apply it in a sense in my own way. I define it. My first chapter is define your words. So I define it in a way so you can have your playbook, because each 32 teams have their own language, sign language, and they have their terminology of how they execute plays. So I know it's possible because I've seen players come from 1 week being in another team, doing it a whole nother way, and come to us in New Orleans, Houston, or Jacksonville and do it the way that we do it. Mm-hmm. So the transformation is possible, and it can happen very quickly if we apply ourselves.
Just slow it down a little bit.
Well, yeah. And that's why the breathing is so powerful, because you get – so here's the thing. So when I talk about nutrition, you talk about alkalinity, you talk about pH. pH is potential hydrogen. Well, what we're familiar with is MPH. So really potential hydrogen is speed. So when we put MPH is speed, so I'm slowing things down. I'm slowing it down so I can put my mind around it to understand it and to react to the playbook that I've initiated for myself.
Well, I can't wait to hear more about that. It looks and sounds really interesting, and I love the language. And I think sometimes, like you said, we just need to just slow down and listen. I mean, a lot of the stuff we have heard, and people, our listeners, have heard before, but just maybe not in a way that speaks directly to them, or maybe not ready to hear it yet. But I want to just see what you got going on and anything else you would like to share with our people who are listening. What's coming up for you besides your supplement, Ometa? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Ometa.
Ometa.
We just put Ometa changes from Ometa, which means love, as you
right.
know. Mm-hmm. And it's so I think the same way that we talk about the sun salutations and the yoga practices, we have to also show it in business.
Say that one more time, Keith, just in case I didn't hear it, and I don't know if it went out on the audio, but you were saying about Ometa being love, and then after that you said that you added Ometa to it. Say that again, please.
So when you add an A to Ometa, it takes it to another culture, Polynesian culture, and it's basically love in action.
Uh-huh.
And so what I'm saying is the same way that we're showing people sun salutation in the yoga class, we have to show how do we run businesses more mindful. And so the product and how we manufacturers harvest it and in all facets, we're looking to do it more mindful to be a positive addition to the planet instead of a negative one, to do it in the sense of consciousness of the people who work with it, work with the company, for the company, and so forth. And I'm so excited about that because food is the medicine. Food is the herb is the food. And the more we can connect to that source, I think it also helps us accomplish what we need to accomplish, and that's problem solving. And my book, The Mindfulness Playbook, I'm so excited for that to come out. It's just, you know, I've been...
When can we expect that?
Well... You know, again, like I said, we're waiting on some, we got relationships with the NFL and looking at endorsing it. And so I'm ready to get it out, but you can actually pre-order it on my website and it'll be out soon. That's all I know. It's done.
And what's that website again for our listeners?
KeithMitchell59.com. And 59 is not my age. It's my number.
I think I would have guessed that. And where else can we find you and keep up with you, Keith?
Instagram is good. I'm getting more active on Instagram. Keith Mitchell 59. My Twitter, I do a little bit on Twitter too. K_Mitchell59. And yeah, so yeah, hit me up. I love to engage with you and share the practices.
Well, I love following along your journey, and you're a huge inspiration to me. I had so much fun meeting you. I think it was at Wanderlust down there in Austin, Texas.
So much fun.
When I got to meet you back in the good old days when we could all get together like that, right?
Yes.
Hopefully those days will be here again. But I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I want to thank you so much for the work that you're doing and the inspiration that you are sharing. And as always, just let us know how we can support you. And if there's anything else you'd like to say to our listeners before we go.
Well, like I said earlier, Jen, thank you so much for having me. And in this to the people listening, through this quarantine, again, time serve. Allow this time to serve us and not us serve time.
Nice. Well said. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll see you soon.
See you soon. Bye.